Manhattan Bank has been serving the Gallatin Valley since 1905. Started by local farmers in order to help grow the agriculture industry, Manhattan Bank has since grown into a full-service bank serving the entire valley. With branches in Manhattan, Churchill, Three Forks, and Bozeman, you're never far from your local bank.
As banks are consolidating and changing, Manhattan Bank sets themselves apart through consistency and a small-town banking feel. Come see why we have been in the valley for well over 100 years. Stop by the new building in Bozeman, see Justin Skillman and Tyler Dosher for your business banking, and Brad Whitmer for your home loans. Go Cats!
Member FDIC.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy.
All right. Welcome back, Bobcat fans. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the R&R CatCast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Foley. He's one of your hosts, Ryan Thornburg. We are the Ryans of the R&R CatCast, the Montana State affiliate of the Big Sky Podcast Network. We are a podcast for the fans, by the fans, and we hope we are your first listen for Bobcat banter. Thorny, we're here, man. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. You know what I did tonight? I did Taekwondo with my daughter. First time I've done any sort of martial arts. In 30 years, it was a little weird being out there, but I just wanted to throw it out there. It was a weird night for me, man. It was fun, but I'm doing good. It felt good. Feeling good. Feeling strong. I've been watching some Cobra Kai. I started Cobra Kai today, the new season of it. Transitioned right into doing some Taekwondo later that night. What can I say? How you doing, man?
Man, I'm picturing you in the white uniform with the white belt and you trying to do some sort of move or maybe break some sort of board. It's
enjoy. Stuff, enjoy that mental thought. I don't have a uniform yet. It's on a trial basis.
You're welcome. You're welcome, listener. All right. Well, we got a lot on tap for you tonight, woo! Listener. Thanks for joining us. We just got done talking with Terry Horseman from the Belligerent Bee podcast. That is the lion's share of our show. He got on and we talked all things Oregon State. And Ryan and I are going out to Portland this weekend. We can't wait. And so if you're out there in Portland, if you want to reach out to us, there's plenty of ways to get to us. You already know. Get at us. We would love to meet up with you. We'll be there Friday, leaving Sunday. And we would love to meet up with the Bobcat fans and just, you know, share beer, share laugh, whatever. Anyways, Bobcats getting together is one of my favorite things in life. Just seeing guys in blue and gold, women in blue and gold, just getting together. Go Bobcats. I love it.
Love it, too. And yeah, please reach out to us. We'd love to meet up anybody. I think we're going to leave our Saturday pretty clear before the game. So we'd love to just go where everyone else is going. So hit us up. We'll meet you, give you a coolie, have a beer.
All right. Well, show outline for you. We're going to go over some news. We'll talk about the FCS stats poll. We'll talk about the news, the injury news coming out of Montana State land, which unfortunately has been kind of racking up lately. So we'll cover that. We're going to give our brief thoughts on the Morehead State game. That was just a beat down to 63-13, 63-10. I can't even remember
13.
Right now.
13.
Top of my head, right?
13.
13. There it was. Yeah. It was a game. We played it and we dominated. We did an instant reaction show that you should go back and listen to, but Ryan and I are not. We're going to try to be intentionally kind of brief on that because the interview with Terry was fun and it went about, you know, 45 minutes. So we'll give you plenty of time to listen to that. And other than that, we'll talk about what's in our golden coolie. And I don't think I'm missing anything. I think that's about it.
The only thing I think you missed, and I just thought about it, you know, you didn't mention our sponsor yet. This is, we're back into sponsor land, right? This is new for us. This is the first episode, I think, that we're running with an ad that we haven't recorded yet. We'll get that taken care of by the time this releases, I promise. But yeah, Manhattan Bank, appreciate the sponsorship opportunity for the next season. And, you know, we got to call them out here. So appreciate Justin and the guys over at Manhattan Bank for being a sponsor for the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My uncle who listens to this, well, I probably shouldn't say his name, but he
Uncle Foley.
He contacted me and he you know, he knows those guys over at Manhattan Bank, and he was just tickled pink when he heard that we were partnering with them. And I just think that's pretty cool. So already connection with Justin and his crew over at Manhattan Bank. So super stoked to be partnering with them. All right. Well, let's get into, well, let's start off with what's in our golden coolie, or what was in
what's
our
in golden, your coolie. Golden coolie.
Yeah, you said it right. Pretty funny here. we both were talking before, after we were done recording with Terry, he was like, Foley, I drank both my beers already. And you're like, yeah, I did the same. So what I did drink, and I'm just going to name one because we don't need to drink two. I had the Bozone Amber, the Bozone Select Amber Ale was my go-to beer for this evening. And it was delicious and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And yeah, not much else to say about that classic. Still one of my favorite ambers of all time. I had to bring out a special beer for a special game for a special guest.
You and I are on the same wavelength tonight. I have the Perry Street Amber. Growler Phil, one of my top three beers of all time.
I wonder what it means. We both drinking ambers on the same day. We're not usually in sync in the style of beers that we're drinking. I don't have the stats to see our records, our win-loss records after we drink the same exact style of beer.
Oh, man.
We'll find out.
Yeah, I guess we will, man. All right, let's get right into the Stats FCS poll that came out today. Montana State staying static at 4. Nothing else changed. Montana's at 3. South Dakota State still at 2, even though they're still 1-1, and North Dakota State is still top dog. Weber, I almost called him Weber. Holy cow. They're not Weber. They are Weber. They are looking really good. Weber moved up to 12.
That was impressive.
And in fact, the power ranking, I had Weber for Big Sky power ranking. I put Weber at number 1. I had the Grizzlies at number 2, Montana State and Sac State tied at number 3. But that's just how I rolled on that. Eastern Washington dropped down to 14. They were at 12 last week. And I don't think there's any other Big Sky schools in the top 25, although I think UC Davis was getting some votes on the back end, but they weren't eclipsing that top 25.
No, UC Davis played a strong game against South Dakota State, but yeah, I don't think they made the final rankings there. But yeah, that was a good performance by the Aggies.
Yeah, I thought so too, especially over there. Where is South Dakota State? What
Brookings?
What city do they play in? Yeah, that's right. Brookings, South Dakota. There you go. All right.
Real quick here. You mentioned it, your vote. Let's just run through the Big Sky power rankings. The Big Sky Conference. Gosh, I can't say that. The Big Sky Podcast Network. Power rankings. I voted very similar to you. The rankings came out. Montana, number 1. Weber State, number 2. Number 3. Montana State, number 4, Sac State, number 5, Idaho, number 6, Northern Arizona, after their...
Oh!
I know, right? Like, it's...
Come on, serious?
Yeah, well, they were... Last week, they're number 5, too. So, I voted... I don't remember where I voted them, but it wasn't 5. It did get pretty jumbly down, though, from... The top 4 are very clear. I'm okay with any of them, but then Idaho, NAU, UC Davis, Eastern Washington, like... I feel like you can shuffle those around personally. But Idaho's 0-2. Like, yeah, okay, impressive losses, but they're still losses. So I don't know. NAU's win over Sam Houston State was more impressive, I think, than necessarily Idaho's loss to Indiana. Yeah. So I did not vote Idaho number 5. But, you know, I did vote Weber State number 1 and the Grizz number 2, but that is very close. But I put a lot of emphasis on Weber State smoking Utah State. That was a beatdown. That was, 35-7. And I think Utah State only scored because they had like a huge kickoff return that either scored or set them up in goal line position to score. So it was almost a shutout. So huge kudos to Weber State. And there's the power rankings, which are very subjective to change and include us. Who does this include? It includes the Tubbs of the Club guys, which I think there's 3 or 4 of them. Weber State Weekly, 2 or 3 of those guys, the Grizz Fan Pod. And is that it? Am I missing anybody?
Does the guy from NAU?
I don't know if he votes in the poll or not. He's like the outsider of the group. He's part of the network, but he never really talks to us. So,
all righty, let's talk injuries, because there's been quite a bit of them.
Oh, yes, there were.
Let's pull up the old document.
Yeah. So, yeah, Vegan came out and had his press conference today and mentioned some injury updates. I'll start with the good news. Simeon, or what? How? I'm sorry. What's the pronunciation that I'm missing now?
Simeon
Woodard. I can't say
Simeon.
That.
Simeon.
It doesn't work for me.
Simeon.
I'll try.
Simeon.
Simeon Woodard is healthy and he will play on Saturday. So that's good news. Afonso, there was no real update. Still month to month, I guess. Did announce that Kagan Williams is officially done for the year. We had heard rumblings of that. That's a bummer. I don't know if he's going to redshirt and try and come back next year. That's a neck injury, spine type stuff. He might retire. That's pure speculation. But the point is, he never took a single snap, never played in a single game for the Bobcats, which is a bummer for the Bobcats and obviously for Kagan Williams himself. Lane Sumner has an elbow injury. No real timeline that I remember seeing, but I'm speculating that that's going to be at least 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, he's going to be out for a little while as well. Jared White, somebody on the board, I didn't listen to the press conference. Someone said that Vegan said that White's going to be out for at least 2 months, possibly more, possibly this season.
Yeah.
Tom Stuber speculated that he's like, I think he may have broken his leg. It didn't look gruesome, but it looked serious in the way he was reacting. So Jared White's probably out for the foreseeable future, if not at least the regular season. But Garrett Kuhn, who hasn't had any runs, apparently he's been nursing something, is healthy. So now we have two running backs. We have Elijah Elliott, who the coaches. This is a question we have from our buddy. Let me pull it up real quick. But he's asking is basically, and this is a question going around Bobcat Nation, is Elijah Elliott in the doghouse? It was our buddy Christopher Hill asks us, like, why is Vegan so anti-Elijah Elliott? You and I have been talking about this since last year. And it finally came out that Elliott was a little banged up last year. Maybe that's why he didn't get so much run. But I think it's well documented that Vegan was really riding Afonso last year and just wasn't going to be persuaded from that mindset. But no idea what happened this year. He barely got any carries last week. He could have had carries at any point. And McNeese State, instead they gave Lane Sumner 24 carries. So I don't know. It seems like there's a rift or something. I couldn't tell you what it is, but it just seems like the coaching staff last week did everything they could to avoid giving Elijah Elliott the football as a running back until late in the second half when the game was well over, when they realized, like, you know what? Maybe he's going to be our running back for the foreseeable future, so maybe we should get him a few carries. I don't know. It's weird.
I thought he did get in the blocking game, but it was like we became hyper focused on watching Elijah Elliott. We're like, yep, still no carries.
Yeah.
It was almost comical.
He'd come in motion and Tommy would pull it out. And I'm like, okay, well, never mind.
Another pass there. Do you know they call the receivers call themselves the Air Rock?
The Air Rock?
They call themselves, they refer to the receiving corps as Air Rock.
Who's they?
Have you heard that? The whole receiving corps.
They refer to themselves.
Justin Udy's room.
They refer to themselves. Okay. At the Air Rock?
They just call themselves Air Rock.
That doesn't make any sense.
I think it's kind of funny.
I don't get it. I'm sorry. I must be missing something awesome or obvious here. I don't understand. But, if you're confident enough to call your group, like you got a nickname for yourselves that you're liking them, that's good confidence. I like that. Whatever the nickname may be, kudos. real quick question why we got sort of on the subject, and I got Christopher Hill's questions from Twitter up here. He also asked, do you think we'll see Taco Dowler at running back?
Oh, no.
I don't. I think there's other options in front of Taco Dowler. He's pretty slight. I think he's too small, and obviously I don't think he really played running back.
I don't think so either.
I think people are kind of likening the situation to the Grizz last year when Junior Bergen ended up having to play running back. I just don't think it's quite the same situation, but it's in terms of Junior Bergen versus Taco Dowler, but it is in terms of like, we need someone to run the ball. Cause it's getting desperate.
Yeah. Well, that was my buy or sell to you later in the episode that we're going to see a new running back. I think that's got to be a buy. We are going to see somebody we haven't seen run the ball or maybe have heard of run the ball. Maybe
Miles Jackson.
Gosh, I don't know. Who are they saying? Miles Jackson? Is that what you said?
I did my own personal research today. He ran for like 1,200 yards in high school. He carried the ball every year, double-digit figures in high school. So that's my complete guess. That's my complete guess.
Tavian Williams?
He's like 185 pounds. He's like 5'11", 5'10", or something around that. So he's decent size enough to do it. So that's my vote for complete randomness. I would have never guessed Tavian Williams would be the guy who would get a carry.
Alrighty. Let's go into the stats. Let's give our brief synopsis of the Morehead State game.
63-13, the Bobcats come out on top against a very overmatched and shell-shocked Morehead State. This happened very quickly with the turnovers right off the bat, but 27 first downs for the Bobcats to just 14 for the Eagles. The Bobcats were just 3 of 5 on third down. They only had 5 third down attempts. Looking back at the stats, oftentimes, this is the first time I've looked at the stats. That's kind of crazy. Morehead State was 6 for 20. That's very good defense on that, but they were 2 for 2 on fourth down, so there's a area to work on. 585 yards for total offense for the Bobcats, just 260 for the Eagles. I'm looking at ESPN now, which is different than like MSU stuff that shows like 675, because there's a 90-yard Tavian Williams rush in there, and it says he fumbled the ball, and then Morehead State picked it up from like the MSU like 0-yard line and rushed 100 yards back for a touchdown. That's all wrong. This looks correct to me. 585 total offense for the Bobcats, 260 for the Eagles, 295 yards on the ground for the Bobcats by only handing the ball off like 6 times to running backs is pretty impressive and impressive and pretty wild. I said 295 passing yards, excuse me. They ended up with 290 though, rushing the ball. So pretty dead even in terms of yardage. Very balanced attack by the Bobcats, which I love to see. The Eagles only ended up with 127 yards on the ground. I guess only that. I mean, that's pretty decent for how the game shaked out, but I think a lot of it was kind of in garbage time there at the end. 3 penalties for the Bobcats for 40 yards, 6 for the Eagles for 38 yards, 3 turnovers for each team. Sean Chambers threw 2 interceptions. And the Bobcats recovered 2 fumbles and had a Nolan Askelson interception to get to 3. Time of possession battle was won by Morehead State, which is not surprising because the Bobcats had a very short fields and also scored very quickly when they had longer fields. Just 27 minutes of time of possession for the Bobcats. Why don't you go into some individual stats?
Malott went 16 for 22 for 265, which makes my bold prediction correct. Woo!
What'd you say?
I said he would go over 250.
Nice. Oh, yeah. That was both of ours, remember? Because I had to pivot because we both came up with the exact same bold prediction.
Well, no, it was really only mine. So
I'll let you have it.
Anyways, he had two touchdowns, and good job, Ryan Foley. Sean Chambers had, he was 3 for 17.
3 for 7.
Or no, 3 for 7. 3 for 7, excuse me, for 30 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. The Sean Chambers special right there. He had 127 yards on 7 rushes, 2 touchdowns with a long of 55. Marquis Johnson, he was a speedster. The first time I got to see him carry the ball, he was 4 for 61, 2 touchdowns. Elijah Elliott, he had 4 touches for 32 yards. Malott, he carried the ball 5 times for 26 yards. So kind of a little bit, Malott had a much better passing game. We'll talk about that slightly. Jared White, well, I don't even want to mention that. That's just sad.
One carry.
Trayton Pickering, let's go.
Woo.
I know Vim listens to this. He's going to be stoked when I say this. 5 for 98. Let's go, Trayton. Yes. All right. With a long of 38, he looked good. In fact, I thought Malott looked great when passing to Trayton Pickering. And then Ravi, Air Rock Alston.
Get yourself all tongue-tied on that one.
Yeah, I know, right? The Air Rock crew, he was 5 for 96 with a long of 43. And Willie P had 2 touchdowns quietly. Willie P just racking up the scores this year. Man, he's having himself a year. So, long story short, you know, this was a game Montana State dominated. But if I pulled out a stat for you, Thorny, this is something that kind of was concerning to me. Morehead State had drives of 14 plays and 9 plays in the second quarter. Or like in the middle of the game.
Some sustained drives.
Yeah, sustained drives. And
Yeah, they Montana, score on either one of them.
If we're going to be nitpicky about this game, that could be a place where we could be nitpicky.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be hard to find any real big negatives for that. Turnovers continue to be kind of an issue for the Bobcats, 5 on the year. I don't know what we did last year, but it didn't feel like we turned the ball over very often. And, you know, Sean Chambers threw two interceptions, and they were both like very really poor decisions. And very, I mean, the goal line one wasn't necessarily a poor throw, but it was a poor decision to throw it where he did. The interception to Taco, like where he was targeting Taco Dollar, was a poor decision and a poor throw. But fumbles kind of being a problem. Tevin Williams, I mean, let's be real. He's a converted wide receiver getting the rock, and he got into a pile, and the ball stripped out when the referees potentially probably should have blown it dead before the ball popped out. And that led to the Morehead State's only touchdown as they recovered that for a touchdown. But, you know, but it, you know, here and there, like it just adds up. So we've had 5 turnovers on the year. So that's a concern for me. But so many positives from this game and stuff we talked about wanting to see an improvement from. Tackling was better. No big, huge plays given up compared to, I mean, they did have, I'm looking at their rushing stats here, and like D. Connors had a 1 rush for 38 yards. I'm like, that's the fake punt. That's what that is. That's that fake punt. So that counts as a rush. So the only, other than that, their quarterback had a 13 yard long, and all the other running backs had less than 10 as their long. So you take out that fake punt for 38 yards. They had 127 yards. They would have been less than 100 yards if you took that fake punt away. So overall, I thought the defense took a big step in the right direction. Still some run fits that need to be cleaned up a little bit. Tackling was much better. Overall, defense looked much better. Offense, I don't know the last time I saw a team rush for 290 yards by only giving their running backs 5 carries. I guess 5, 7, and if you 7 carries by running backs, and if you count RJ Fitzgerald, you get 9. So 9 carries by running backs and still manage 290 yards on the ground. Just pretty weird stat.
Yeah. We played a lot of guys. And I think that's the silver lining behind this. If you look at the defense, maybe even in the second quarter, you know, the Morehead drives, we just played a lot of the young guys, and that's a good thing. So happy to see that. Moving on, these games are always like, yeah, you and I talked about this earlier. We don't want to watch this necessarily after the second quarter, where we have to watch it because we sit here and we talk about it. But it's not a fun game to watch overall.
No.
It's just not the greatest game.
No, but that's what you should do, though.
It's like a Bobcat football.
Like MSU has scheduled Bobcat football kinds of games in the past and previous coaching staffs and, you know, struggled, or one game was like 24-3 or something, like much less impressive wins. Like this is as impressive as you could possibly get, really. Like it was a beatdown of an overmatched team, but that's what it should be when you schedule a team like this.
It counts. It's a Division I win.
That's the best part about these wins, is they're fully Division I wins for the playoff committee, because they count more than a Division II win, even though Morehead State would be probably a pretty bad Division II team. At least from what we saw. It's hard to know. We came out and popped him in the mouth and had 2 turnovers right off the bat. So the game was over within the first 6 minutes of the game. You never know. Blake Glessner, man. What's up with Blake Glessner?
He's no longer stones to me, man. I don't know.
It's like pebbles.
I feel like he's got a little bit of a head case when it comes to like 40 yards and out there. He's really struggles between 40 and 50.
Yeah.
And I feel for the kid. Like, I know we call him Stones Glessner around here, and we say that because we want to give him confidence. And I mean, I don't know if he listens to us or not. I mean, maybe it's just purely conjecture, but I would like to see some more consistency out of him.
I mean, we need it. We just need more consistency from the kicking game. And he's got the talent. He'll get it back. But yeah, something seems to be just a little. He's in a little bit of a funk, so. He'll get out of it.
That carried over from last year, though. So it seems like it's a pattern now. I don't know if it's a funk or kind of more like he is who he is. So I hope he gets out of it, but he's kind of proven that's who he is.
He's only 2 for 4 this year on field goals. So,
yeah.
I mean, he did kick 9 extra points, though. Maybe his foot was tired.
He's like one of the leading scorers in Montana State history. So he's as a young guy. It's crazy when you look at the stats. Hey Ryan, let's get into the Oregon State stuff.
Yeah, so we brought on Terry Horseman from the Oregon the Belligerent Beavs podcast and Oregon State fan podcast to come on. And honestly, we talked about pretty much everything that I think we want to talk about in that game. I mean, I have some extra thoughts, but really we're running up against it here. I did have one question for you, though. I just want to kind of get your take on this, and let's try and make it brief for the sake of time here. Just how do you think Montana State should approach this game? And what I mean by that is there's certain games you go into an FBS team where you know you have a chance, you're going to come out, you're going to try and win, maybe pull out some stops, maybe run some trick plays, kind of shock the world type situation. Or do you think with their injury situation, kind of where the Bobcats are, maybe the gap in talent or whatever, do you just use this as kind of a measuring stick? You kind of run some stuff you want to see, get some players some time, kind of that angle. How do you think MSU kind of approaches this game from that perspective?
Montana State's the number four team in the nation. We have to come out expecting to win this game. And when I listened to Coach Vegan today talk on the presser, he says we have to prepare for every game the same. Our preparation should not deviate week to week depending on the opponent. And I really like that answer because your elite teams should prepare the same day in and day out. And that's what he said exactly on that. And I think the Montana State comes out pulling the same stuff they do every week, the same intensity they should pull every week. And if they're not, then we have some bigger problems on our hand. But I think Montana State is going to come out and try to pull out all the stops and win this game.
I mean, that's a very good point. I hadn't considered that. And while you were talking there, it made me realize, like, you know, what would North Dakota State think about this game? They would expect to win. They wouldn't hope to win. They're like, oh, let's hope to compete. They're like, we're going to win this game. They would go into that winning that. So, I mean, that's a very good point. That's what championship programs, the mentality should be there. Even if you know you're overmatched, like you, I mean, that's what you do. You expect it. You expect to win in all situations. And I'm hoping that's kind of the culture that we're cultivating here at Montana State. So it's a good call. That's how I would have voted and said it. But, wouldn't even oppose the question if I had thought about that. That complete angle of it before. Lastly, you're going to kill me on here. We talked a little bit about keys to the game with Terry. Do you have any other keys to the game? I just want to say avoid a slow start. That's it. We can't come out like Morehead State and get pummeled 14-0 right off the bat by fumbling the ball. That's my only other thing I want to say. We can't come out slow. It doesn't have to be like racing out to a 21-point lead or anything. We just got to go into halftime within striking distance.
I could agree with that. I'm going to ask you a question to avoid that question because I don't have any keys to the game. I think I don't know about that one. Buy or sell, Cats will score more than 21 points.
Oh man. I mean, my prediction on the Bobcat board, I said we'd score 13, but you know, I'm very ticky-tacky, I waver all the time. So right now I'm feeling a lot better about it, but I'm probably still going to sell that. 21 seems optimistic.
Okay. I don't know where I stand on that one. I probably would sell that as well.
Yeah. I mean, with our running back situation, it just seems like a lofty goal. Maybe I'm completely underestimating the offense without the running backs, how good we truly are throwing the ball, getting guys in space, all these kinds of things. Maybe I'm underestimating, but if we have zero turnovers, maybe.
Buy or sell, Cats have a coin flip chance of winning.
Sell.
Yeah, less than 50%.
Yeah, I'd say 30, 25.
Buy or sell Nutella over peanut butter.
Sell, man. Fuck like Nutella. a fake chocolate sauce over real creamy, just ground up peanuts and oil. No, peanut butter is way better.
No, it's hazelnut. But
whatever, it's processed garbage. All sorts of. Like, read the label on that crap. Give me some nice, natural peanut butter. Give me a honey roasted peanut butter with honey. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Peanut butter, way better. I love peanuts. I love peanut butter, man. You, like, went right into one of my favorite foods of all time, peanut butter. Easy choice.
I love Nutella, man. It's replaced the peanut butter in my life. I love it. All right.
Okay. All right, well, before we get into the audio with Terry over at the Belligerent Beefs, you know, Skyline Sports, Coulter Nuanez reached out and was wondering if we would be willing to promote his little tour of Portland he's doing this week. They got three stops, I believe, on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to play a little clip that he sent over to us. So we're going to lead into the audio with the Belligerent Beefs with a little ad from Skyline Sports, kind of letting you know where they're going to be. We're going to try and actually meet up with Coulter on Friday, I believe. Maybe we'll talk to him a little bit then at the bar he's going to be at. But we'll play the audio. We'll get into the audio with Terry Horseman, and then we're probably just going to end the episode. I don't think we're going to come back. I think we've said all we want to say on this. So, fully, let's just say it right here then, I guess, man. Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Grizz and Bobcat fans alike, Coulter Nuanez from ESPN Montana, letting you know September 14th, 15th, and 16th, we will have live Nuanez Now broadcasts from various places in Portland, Oregon, in association with both the Grizzly Scholarship Association and the MSU Alumni Foundation, plus to be on hand to cover Montana State's football game against Oregon State in downtown Portland Saturday, September 17th. We will be broadcasting live from Sidelines, the Wild Hair Saloon, and Stadium Sports Bar. Come hang out with me, Coulter Nuanez, get all the best insight on the Grizz, the Bobcats, and the rest of the Big Sky Conference, and come enjoy a 10-barrel brew or two. Nuanez Now, live from Portland, September 14th through the 16th, presented by 10 Barrel Brewing.
All right, Bobcat fans, well, now we're bringing in Terry Horseman from the Belligerent Beef Podcast to talk a little bit about the Oregon State-Montana State matchup at, I'm going to call it Genwild Field in Portland, because that's what I'm used to calling it. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Terry, tell us a little bit about you and your podcast and your affiliation with Oregon State.
Yeah, I'm an alum of Oregon State, class of 2011, and one of the founding co-hosts of the Belligerent Beefs podcast, which is hosted by myself and two of my best friends from college, JP Bertram and Benjamin Lawrence Sebastian Wehage, aka Benny Bedlam, because he's crazy, and a bunch of other monikers as well. We've going on, you know, about 18, 19 years of friendship, and we started the Belligerent Beefs podcast in spring of 2021. We had kind of kicked the tires on the idea of starting an Oregon State podcast before the pandemic, then kind of all through 2020, and just hadn't really pulled the trigger. Then Oregon State men's basketball, by some divine miracle, made it to the Elite Eight. And we were kind of like, God damn it, we could have been podcasting this the entire time. So once that magical run was over, we kind of started that spring going into summer when things are usually dead in college sports landscape, and that kind of helped us sort of, you know, get our footing a little bit, and then into football last year. And so we just published our 63rd episode this morning. The football and basketball season, we try to record on Sunday nights and have episodes ready for our listeners on Mondays. And it's been a pretty fun year for Oregon State athletics. We do go football heavy during the fall, but also we've had pretty successful men's and women's soccer programs the last year or two as well. So we try to cover all our bases across the athletic department, and then also just have a lot of fun. We consider it more of a variety show than just an Oregon State sports show. So, you know, we'll go deep into everything Oregon State we can, but also we have a drink segment. I believe you guys may as well. We will talk about Arby's, and we will talk about Jack in the Box and all the fast food and music hot takes possible. So we just try to have as much fun as we can. And it's been really helpful that we started it, and Oregon State football is now, you know, having a couple of winning seasons, it looks like, back to back after a few years in the dark ages. So
yeah, you can kind of see I'm holding it up there for the video. Funny story. You can't say koozie. That's trademarked. We call them coolies. We don't want to get sued.
Really? Oh, we might get sued then, because we have those on our website and sell them with koozies, whatever. We haven't got any cease and desist letters yet.
Yeah, but we actually learned that from the people. that we buy these from. They told us that. They actually, it's like coolies.com or something like that, because they're not even messing with it, because it's owned by Bic, you know, like Bic Razors has the trademark.
For sure. Let me know how you company. Get an R&R Cat Cast koozie, because I'd love to have one.
Oh,
we will mail you one.
Yep.
We love giving them out. Yep.
Awesome.
Right on. Hey, before we get into anything, like the most random thing I saw last weekend was an Oregon State highlight of some chainsaw you guys fire up on the sideline, and it looks dangerous. Like, I'm literally concerned, like, smoke's billowing out of it, and I'm pretty sure there is no chain, but I'm not 100% sure. What's the story on that thing?
There is no chain on it, so I've been told that it's harmless. It does look concerning. I don't even know the entire history of the chainsaw in Oregon State football. I was a freshman in the fall of 2006, and the first game I went to, we were playing Idaho, and it was the first third down that the defense had, and they just played a loud ass chainsaw sound over the stadium loudspeakers, and it got everyone like revved up, I guess. This works. So I get the chainsaw has been ubiquitous with Oregon State football for as long as I've been baptized into Beaver fandom. But one of my friends here, and I live in Minneapolis. I think I mentioned that before I started recording. One of my friends who just has nothing to do with Pacific Northwest sports or whatever was like, wouldn't beavers be offended by the presence of the chainsaw as it's, you know, chopping down the trees that like they're using to build dams and whatever?
Competition, right?
Exactly, but I think, you know, the turnover chainsaw and Oregon State football and, you know, the Beaver fam, it exists in a parallel universe of peace and tranquility where with everyone working together. And I don't know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't know that I would choose it, but the student athletes seem pretty fired up anytime they get an interception and can go fire up the what I hope is still a chainless chainsaw. It's a show to the student section.
Like wield it and like bring it up and put it over their head. Right. But the guy literally fired it up like a two-stroke engine, like puff of smoke comes out of that. And I was like, is that a Husqvarna over there? Is that a steel? I didn't know what it was.
And I don't know if you guys follow Major League Soccer at all, but the Portland Timbers mascot, Timber Joey, has a chained chainsaw that he uses and cuts a log slice off of an actual log for every goal that the Timbers score. So I don't even know if the Beavers are bringing their own chainsaw to the game this Saturday. There's going to be one on site probably. They probably need to get clearance to use it. I don't know, but definitely chainsaw state of Oregon. It's a weird thing. I don't know everything about it, but yeah. So any Montana State fans who will be watching the game or at the game this Saturday and have not watched an Oregon State football game before, there is a giant chainsaw that the defense revs up and picks up whenever it forces a turnover. So you'll probably be hoping to not see it at all. But
If there is an interception or
fumble recovery, you might see it, but it shouldn't hurt anybody.
Famous last words.
Ideally, it won't hurt anyone.
We should get our pictures with it, Thorny.
Here we go.
So you guys are both going to be at the game on Saturday?
Right on. Yeah, we're going. I'm flying out on Friday. Thorny's driving down. Okay, and nice. We're going to make a road trip of it. We typically get to go to like one or two games a year. We went to what we call our Gold Rush game last year and then the national championship, which was a lot of fun down in Frisco. Right. And this is kind of a quick flight for me. It's like a less than an hour from Spokane, and Ryan comes up from North Seattle area. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Nice. Yeah. I'll be there as well. I'm flying out to Portland on Thursday and staying with one of our co-hosts. So we'll be around. I'll show you guys a message of where we're pre-gaming on Saturday, and we can meet up and
All right. Well, sorry, Bobcat fans, we had some audio glitches there. So I don't know what happened or where we are. I think we're just talking about making the trip out there ourselves, being at the game.
Official / unofficial tailgating plans.
Yes, that's right. Right. We weren't sure if we're going to do the actual Bobcat alumni tailgate. So we'll have to meet up for a drink or something at some point before the game starts. Let's move into a little bit of football chat here, Terry. My first question about Oregon State, obviously they're off to a pretty good start here, 2-0. What is it, the fifth year for Jonathan? Ah, man, I cannot say Jonathan tonight. Coach Smith. Tell us a little bit about Coach Smith, would you?
Jonathan Smith, that psyched me out on if I could say Jonathan or not, Ryan.
I was saying it so wrong.
Coach Smith, it's the fifth year. He took over the program when it was at maybe its darkest stage ever. And there was a lot of worry, I think, when he took over the program, not because of any of his limitations, but just, you know, we went 1-11 in 2017, and clearly a situation where the kids on the team were playing their asses off, but it was bleak. It was maybe arguably the worst Power Five team in the country, and maybe the worst or most difficult job in all of FBS. And Jonathan Smith's a guy, he was the quarterback in the late 90s when this team sort of came out of a similar dark age. He was the quarterback when it ended a streak of 28 consecutive losing seasons there in the late 90s, and then was able to make it to the Fiesta Bowl in 2000. That was one of the more fun college football teams I think there were around at that sort of the turn of the century, as Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh were teammates, and then of course became teammates again the next year for a big chunk of their pro career. Steven Jackson was on that team and barely even played because he was the backup to Ken Simonson, who got a good chunk of Heisman votes that year. And then after that, Dennis Erickson, the head coach, sort of goes to the NFL, and Mike Riley comes back, and then Oregon State's kind of not really a national championship contender by any means, but is a competent, solid bowl to maybe pretty good bowl team for the rest of that decade. So we kind of got in a rhythm of being sort of an 8-9 win team, and the Riley era sort of started to get stale a little bit. He ended up getting the Nebraska job, and he got ran out of town in Lincoln, which
that's all you do
about
in Lincoln.
About 5 years ago, which is kind of timely with what's happening there with Scott Frost. I think Nebraska fans thought it couldn't get worse when they ran Mike Riley out of town, and it got a whole lot worse, a whole lot quicker. So there was a lot of questions as if Jonathan Smith, of course, like Corvallis, it's a small town. It's an hour south of Portland. It's in a conference with budgets like USC for the next 2 years now, but USC traditionally at the time, and Oregon. And it's a tough place to recruit. And it's just sort of a tough branding situation, just being sort of a small dog in a Power Five school. But hey, hire the quarterback for the most successful team in school history and see how it works. And it's been brick by brick. It's been slow. They went from 1-11 to 2-10 in 2018. 2019, they went 5-7 and seemed way ahead of schedule. The COVID year was weird, as it was for everyone in college football. But then last year, in his fourth year, making it to a bowl game, I think, you know, it's kind of hard to, you can't really plan a parade route for a team that goes 7-6. But people were very excited about this 7-6 team last year. And I do think the half decade of work he's done is as impressive as what any coach in the country has done, because this team was honestly on the chopping block. Like, you could make the argument to just get rid of Oregon State football at the time he took over it. And they're playing really well. They're playing their asses off and winning games. And I think there's been some highs and some lows, but it's really, I think, one of the most incredible turnarounds. And I'm saying that through orange and black colored glasses and with a lot of Beaver bias. But the way we all felt 5 years ago to where we're at right now, there's no chance that this team goes in and wins a game like they won at Fresno State the other night. In a tough place to play, in a tough spot, with like that kind of fortitude and that kind of talent. It's really incredible where the team is. And now we're at the point where people are dreaming crazy. And trust me, guys, no one is overlooking Montana State this weekend. We suffered some pretty humbling losses to FCS schools in the past in our own stadium against Sacramento State, Eastern Washington over the years. So no one is expecting this to be a cakewalk, but people are starting to puff their chest out again a little bit. And people are clapping back at Oregon fans who have love calling us little brother every chance they get. So it's fun to be a Beaver fan again. The last year it was, you know, kind of encouraging and there was a lot of hope. But now that there's a bit more confidence and swagger to go with that hope. And it's been a very slow process, but very methodical and very calculated by Coach Smith. And it's sort of, you see it with results get just a little bit better each year. Recruiting rankings just get a little bit better each year. There's no quick fix in a rebuild like this. But he's won over the entire fan base. And I think anyone who's ever been associated with it, and they're playing great football under him. So it's really exciting.
Culture is such a funny thing in college football. Like, you almost have to learn how to win. Like, you can have like the victory, you know, the jaws of defeat snatched from the jaws of victory, whatever I'm trying to say. Like, it's hard to actually like win football games. Like, you can go off and win a game, but then can you come back and win the next game? Like, sustaining is such a culture and such a mindset, something that's it's taken Montana State a long time to cultivate too. And we even had a dip there in the mid 2010s where we had our first losing. I think we've only had three losing records this century, right? Fully, maybe four. The 2001 team, I guess, 2000. So yeah, four or five. But you know, for the majority of it, we've been had a winning program. So it's taken a long time to get to that point. And it's, you know, we're lucky. We have like some of the best resources on the national landscape for our level. You know, Oregon State, obviously, that kind of harder challenge even within their own conference. Couple questions. Tell me a little bit about Trent Bray and the new defense that he's running over there.
Yeah, I mean, Trent Bray, that's another really similar hire to Jonathan Smith. I think going into the sort of what you're jumping off of mentioning culture, it's hard to win football games, as you mentioned, in college football, but it's also hard to make great hires. And a friend of mine who was at University of Washington, where Smith was the offensive coordinator before he got the job, sort of told me that it was the right hire to make because if it works out, he will stay forever. Now, I'm starting to sort of see these financial figures that some of the bigger fish in college football can throw around. So if all the miracles that we're dreaming about were to happen, I think there is, you know, there's maybe a payday that could lure him away. But getting people who sort of understand how to win in your community and at your program are essential. And Trent Bray was a linebacker at Oregon State. He played for some great teams as well. Younger guy, really high energy type coach, has a lot of creative designs on plays, and just he took over on an interim basis last year, where the team was overall, I think we were 5-4 when they fired defensive coordinator Tim Tibisar and made Trent Bray the interim DC, and they were better immediately on the defensive side of the ball. And there's a lot of speed and a lot of athleticism. You'll see you'll see a number of safety and nickelback blitzes this week. The pass rush from the front seven last year was kind of an issue. It improved a little bit once Bray took over full time, and it's improved a lot in the first two games against Boise State and Fresno State. The interior line and the edge are both getting a lot more push. We only sacked Jake Haner from Fresno State one time and didn't turn him over. But I've watched that guy chop defenses up his entire career at Fresno. And we made him look human and look uncomfortable. And then in the fourth quarter, he kind of turned it on and it sort of became a video game, shot for shot match that we fortunately, I think a big part of winning last week was we had the ball last, which is always helpful. Clock management's a thing. But I think Bray will try to get a lot of movement and a lot of excitement going on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about the turnover chainsaw. The guys want any opportunity they can to rev it up and show it to the crowd. So they'll probably, take some risks. I think there'll be a lot of movement and a good a variety of blitzes that you'll see. But even so, he's been the offensive coordinator, I think, for probably a total of now just 6 games. So I think the college football world still kind of figuring out what a Trent Bray defense looks like. But he is, you know, he's an Oregon State product, one of those hard-nosed, hard-hitting linebackers from back in the day, and then worked his way into the coach's booth and has built a defense in his image. So they're very fast and very athletic. They there might be a bit of a disadvantage on size, but you might be able to get your big goons up front, get some push on them. I think that's probably a strategy that Montana State would be wise to use to try and win this game, and I do think they can. But yeah, I think it's a high energy, electric defense that's going to be swinging for big plays early and often on Saturday.
Kind of taking a step back, I know we were talking specifically about the defense, but when I've been scouting your guys' team, Terry, one thing's like coming off the screen to me is you guys are playing with a lot of confidence right now. Because it looks like you guys have like swag going on right now. And just listening to you talk about like the culture shift, it makes sense. You got two Oregon State coaches heading up the head coach and the defensive coordinator. To me, that makes a huge difference. Like if you know the program, if you had success at the program, if you have pride in that program, it just bleeds into your players. That's what makes me a little bit scared coming in as a Montana State Bobcat. I kind of was wondering a little bit about, I mean, I watched your game against, or the highlights against Boise State and Fresno State. And I mean, that's the top half of the Mountain West Conference. And I was just a little bit interested about, do you guys have a rivalry with Fresno State? Because I've been hearing that a little bit lately.
I would say no. And the term rivalry gets thrown around a lot. Not of any disrespect to Fresno State. We hadn't played them since 2003.
Well, but maybe I was wrong.
Maybe some of the older crew, because one of a famous win for Fresno State was, I mentioned the 2000 Fiesta Bowl winning Oregon State team. They kind of laid an egg the next year and went 5-6 overall. And the first game of that season, Jonathan Smith was still the quarterback, and it was at Fresno State, and they lost 44-24. Fresno State rushes the field, tears down the goalpost. and then we haven't played them much since then. We played Boise State kind of a lot. I think maybe 9-10 times over the last 15-16 years. There was one bowl game in there, but that's kind of a lot for a non-conference opponent. But I think
there's not a lot of choices out west,
right? Anytime
there's not a lot of FBS
Pac-12 Mountain West, you know, Pac-12 kind of always has a chip on its shoulder, and there's been a lot of fair criticism of the Pac-12 over the last 10 years, and we don't have time tonight to get into all of that, but I agree with much of it, but also a lot of it's bullshit too. And so Pac-12 kind of has a chip on its shoulder and thinks it's considered less than by mainstream college football media at all times. And Mountain West is kind of the same way. And then Mountain West sees those Pac-12 teams roll into town, and that's a big juicy matchup for them as well. And just by virtue of watching Boise State or Fresno State or San Diego State over the years, those are high quality football teams. So I think every Fresno State fan went into that game on Saturday expecting the Bulldogs to win. And I think every Oregon State fan went in saying they expected to win, thinking that we could win, but secretly just sort of really hoping that we could win, because this team hasn't been great on the road under Smith yet. And we're kind of waiting to see if that's one of the corners that they can turn. And I think Saturday was a really, really big step in that direction. So I wouldn't say there's a rivalry with Fresno State, but there's definitely, you know, there's I at Oregon State, like I knew kids from Fresno who would still be Bulldogs fans. And like kind of like it's not, you know, a lot of California kids go to school in Oregon and a lot of Oregon kids go to school in California. So there is a closeness there. And then also just the Pac-12 Mountain West vibe contributes to it as well. I wouldn't call it a rivalry per se, but you know, definitely I think everyone's aware of the proximity to which the two programs exist, and you know, really, really wanted to win that football game, and I'm just thankful we came out on top.
I have to ask, so that's a perfect segue into this question. was it first and goal? The last play of the game, whatever it was, doesn't matter what down it was. It was 3 seconds left on the 2 yard line, down by 3 points.
Yep.
The Beavers elect to go for the touchdown instead of kicking it for a tie overtime. What do you think of that?
So I kind of loved it. And I think we can't really talk about it without sort of the chess match of timeouts and formations sent. So yeah, it was first down and 3 seconds left. You're down by three on the 2 yard line. For Oregon State has a player named Jack Kaleo, who I'm assuming we'll talk about more. If there's yes. one name I want Bobcat
I have many questions
fans
about him.
To be aware of, it is Jack Kaleo, who has just been a specialist in so many aspects of the game. Primarily, though, the wildcat and running with the football. He's a great short yardage, just head of steam, get the first down, get the touchdown type of player. And when it's first, you have a chance to win the game, I'm like, just go for it. If we don't get it and we lose, like, you can come back from this the rest of the season. But I had no interest in going into overtime. It seemed like Jake Haener was heating up. The Fresno State crowd is always into it, but they felt really into it at that point. I'm like, just go for the jugular and try and win the football game. But of course, they send the offense out there, and I think to see the way Tedford, the head coach of Fresno State, was out the defense. So Jonathan Smith calls timeout. Everyone comes off the field. Then once everyone comes back on the field, it's our field goal unit ready to kick the game time field goal. And Tedford calls timeout. We snap the ball, kick it through, even though it means nothing, to kind of give the implication that, or maybe not, that we were really intending to kick that field goal, but Tedford iced them. And that was Fresno State's last time out. So then everyone comes off the field, everyone comes back on the field, and now it's the offense again, and Coletto lining up at the quarterback spot. Ball snapped to Coletto. He gets into the end zone. Game over. Touchdown. Oregon State wins. So I was a fan of the call, and I can say that now, especially because it worked. We're always fans. As fans of teams, we're fans of calls when they work, especially.
But it would have been the worst call of all time if you failed.
Exactly. But I do, I think there's a lot of logic behind it. The success rate, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but when you need 2 yards from Jack Coletto on the ground, when the defense knows it's coming, you generally get at least 2 yards. And he got in, a Fresno State player put a body on him, but he got in pretty cleanly and cleared the end zone by a good 3 to 4 yards. Yeah. So, of course, Monday morning quarterback looking at it, he made the right call. But even when the field goal unit went out there, and I'm generally on the more conservative side when it comes to offense and taking points, I was like, all right, we're going to overtime. But man, I really think we should just end it now. And I'm glad that it happened that way. But yeah, it was a crazy sequence, and one that I think, of course, asking the coaches today, that Tedford probably would use his timeouts differently, or maybe try and let them kick that field goal. I don't know. But it was just a perfect example of why this goofy sport we love so much is as perfect as it is in all of the crazy ways that it's imperfect. So really fun way to end a football game. And fantastic that it was at like 1:30 in the morning Central Time for me.
Yeah.
I was in rough shape yesterday morning, but one of my favorite plays in recent memory, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting to watch. I don't know if there's a couple of football games on. There was that one, and then the BYU game was pretty much the same time. It was like two crazy football games happening at once. I'm like laying on the couch, like half asleep, like, this is awesome. Like, trying not to fall asleep because I'm an old man pushing 40 over here.
Exactly. On a day of college football where there was like four awesome games happening simultaneously, starting at like with the 9, 10 a.m. games.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit about Jack Kaleo here. I'm curious, how has he been used previously? He's a senior, I'm looking here. So has he been a wildcat guy? Does he throw the ball at all, or is he just going to basically just be running up the gut until he breaks loose into the secondary? And he also, is he a starter on defense, or is he just gets a lot of snaps on defense?
It's hard to answer anything clear with Jack Kaleo, just because sure. He kind of does everything. The joke made by the broadcasters during the Boise State game, he had the 40-yard touchdown run that sealed it, made it a 34-17 victory, and If you watch that game, you know that half of the stadium in Corvallis, which Montana State won't be playing in because the game's in Portland, but half of Oregon State's main stadium is currently under construction. And the joke was, you know, Jack Coletto seals the game. He'll be the one on the west side of Research Stadium, drilling the jackhammer into thing, like hanging sheetrock and working until sunrise, helping that stadium get ready for the 2023 opener, because he just does everything. He came in as a quarterback and, you know, stuck with the program, was one of those classic guys, didn't enter the transfer portal and probably wasn't going to be a every down starting quarterback for a team in the way that he'd want to be, and just found a way to make the role work for him. And he had played a little bit of defense, played on both sides in high school, and he's played lots of snaps on all six special teams units, Wildcat quarterback. He'll take handoffs too. He'll line up at halfback, fullback, and an inside linebacker. I wouldn't consider him a starter on defense, but he'll get snaps on defense. And he had I believe he had a fumble recovery and then another forced fumble against Boise State. Maybe it was just a recovery, but he also had the game sealing interception in the famous win at USC last year. So he's always showing up around the ball. Big number 12. So watch out for 1-2. We call him the jackhammer. He will be involved in the game on Saturday. And his position is just football. He's had great runs and has a lot of rushing touchdowns in his Oregon State career, but you can't really call him a running back. It doesn't feel right to call him a fullback. You know, he's kind of got the linebacker body. But yeah, it was cute last year when they made it to the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, and both Oregon State and Utah State had separate nights on, you know, Jimmy Kimmel Live. And there is a bit where a handful of players went up and introduced themselves and what their position was, and was like, "Oh, I'm BJ Baylor. I play running back. Oh, I'm Jaden Grant. I play safety. I'm Chance Nolan. I play quarterback." And then it got to Jack Coletto. He's like, "I'm Jack Coletto. I play everywhere." And he's not wrong. I really want Jonathan Smith to let him kick an extra point at some point this season. I hope he gets to throw the ball with his quarterback roots, because he hasn't thrown a collegiate touchdown pass. So I want him to score in as many ways as possible. And the schedule is tough the rest of the way, including this Saturday. So unless Oregon State really, really gets going in one of these games, I can't see Smith letting him do it. But he's a special athlete, and this is the last year we have him. But he's been a giant part of this turnaround, and just a great story of, you know, it didn't really happen the way he probably expected it was going to happen for him going from high school into a Power 5 program, but really made it work, and it's been a spectacular career for him.
Well, Montana State fans are going to endear themselves to Jack Coletto if they haven't already, because we have our own version of Jack. His name is Troy Anderson. He's playing middle linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons right now, but he's much like what you just described. He played middle linebacker, right, outside linebacker. He was an All-American at both, and then also an All-American at basically a wing T quarterback for us in the 2018 season, where QB he power. Racked up like pretty much like just unreal.
He had about 1,400 rushing yards and 21 rushing touchdowns from a
That's fantastic. Position.
It's just weird. Yeah. But yeah,
these guys are almost mythical, right?
Exactly. Like
they define your program in some awesome way where you're just like, that guy's Oregon State through and through. And Troy Anderson
makes a lot of and it makes a lot of sense too. Not that I feel like I agree with every old man who yells at clouds and say, "Well, back in my day, we'd never even wore helmets." But a lot of time, like those like old school players, they'd play quarterback and they'd play defensive end and they played punter. Yeah. And I think there are a lot of kids, especially today, where it's just like, "Hey, I just need to give the coach as many reasons as possible to not cut me. Like if I can do everything, even if I am absolutely a master of none, but a jack of all trades and good at everything, like I can help this team win in whatever way." And it's just awesome to see guys like Anderson and Coletto, you know, carve out that niche for themselves at great programs. Cause it's really fun to watch them play, and it's not even a gimmick at all. Like it genuinely impacts winning, and it's cool to see that come to fruition.
So I think I want to ask more broad question maybe now. How do you think Oregon State's going to attack the Bobcat defense? Like, what's your prediction? What are we going to see on Saturday?
I think the run game has been fine so far for Oregon State in the first two games this season, but hasn't been as dominant as I think Smith would have liked to have seen. So I'd expect him to come out and just really try and establish the run. I think there'd be a heavy dose of Jack Coletto, and we have a good number of running backs who can run. We lost our leading rusher last year in BJ Baylor, who is a big part of the rebuild and the success we found last season. But Deshaun Fenwick, he's in his second season at Oregon State, former transfer from South Carolina. He had a 100-yard game last week. I would expect to see a big dose of Fenwick and Coletto early.
He's
in the
a big
game.
Boy.
He is.
Yeah, he's a bruiser.
And he looks bigger than he did last year. I didn't worry about him turning the ball over at all last season, but he lost a fumble early against Boise State, and he put the ball on the ground early in the game against Fresno State. Thankfully, he recovered it. So there's a little bit of worry with him in that regard, and that also there's a couple of questions that I'm curious about. Our tight end Luke Musgrave, Jonathan Smith has said he's not going to play Saturday, and he's a big part of the offense. And also Trey Lowe, who is a very good third down back, who is never going to lead the team in carries, but is a good receiver out of the backfield, and has. Didn't play against Fresno, but was a big part of that Boise State win and even helped the team a lot last year. Trey Lowe will be out for his second consecutive game. So I could see them trying to work in number two tight end Jake Overman, number 81, quite a bit. I think this is an offense that wants to go through its tight ends. But also, man, it's been a bit of a rough go for our receivers so far. There's been some drops. So I do think that Smith is going to sort of attack this as a way for the receivers to kind of get right and make some plays. So I would expect him to try and create space for them early. And I think that will, you know, go through the running game once he establishes that. So I'd say Fenwick and Coletto for sure will be the main point of attack early on offense. That's what I would expect. But I do think Smith will try to open it up to let his pass catchers get some more good tape on, because a few of them have made some really good plays too, but there's been so many big plays just left out on the field. And our quarterback Chance Nolan, who is a younger quarterback and in his the first time he's won the starting job out of fall camp despite playing quite a bit, his quarterback rating and his numbers would be a lot better if it weren't for some of these drops. So I do think Smith is going into this game with that in mind and is going to want to give his wide receivers as many opportunities as possible to sort of push those bad memories of the first two games aside and to make some big plays and to show what they can do, and also help the passing numbers a bit, because they should be much better than what they actually are.
I don't want to hear any complaining about running back injuries from anybody. Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of the running back situation in Montana State at the moment. We are currently on our fifth string running back. We only have two healthy running backs on the roster at the moment. All-American running back from last
ever
year.
I don't want to hear that about anyone, but for this Saturday, I think it's good timing for the Oregon State.
I know. Honestly, yeah. Isaiah Fonse is a very punishing physical running back who's really good at running between the tackles. And I'm sitting here thinking, before we even started talking, like the way that we would have a chance against Oregon State would be to run up the middle between the tackles with Afonso, and he's recovering from injury. He's month to month. I don't know if we'll even get him back this season.
Month to month.
We brought in Kagan Williams from South Dakota, or not South Dakota State, SDSU. San Diego State. See, there's the FCS fan in me talking. My SDSU's mixed up. He isn't going to play a snap for the Bobcats. He's had a neck injury, and he was ruled out for the year today. Our third string running back rushed for 176 yards against McNeese State in game one and injured his elbow in practice leading up to the game against Morehead State. And who am I missing here, Foley? Oh, yeah, Jared White.
Yep.
True freshman running back who had 90 yards in game one. Looked pretty good for a true freshman. Potentially broke his leg on his very first carry last week, like one carry, 4 yards, broken leg. So now we're down to fifth string running back who had, 400 yards last year, but he's been in the doghouse or something. He, like, the coaching staff has just fallen out of favor with him, but no choice now. You're the running back. And then the other guy is like a freshman from Wyoming who's like played nothing. So you're going to see a very interesting offense on Saturday because I have no idea what the Cats are going to do. We beat Morehead State last week by not doing nothing but like fly sweeps and quarterback draws.
Okay.
And the speed of the Oregon State secondary concerns me greatly for that game plan.
Oh, yeah, they are quite fast. It's a good and talented secondary. But I don't know, like, so the big sort of question I had about what Fresno State was doing that second half is their running back, Jordan Mims, was really giving us a hard time. And we shut down the run from the running back standpoint in the first game against Boise State. I don't know if you guys watched the game, but they pulled Hank Bachmeyer, their longtime quarterback, after the first quarter, put in Talen Green, a freshman who hasn't played much but is a dual threat. And it was kind of he made some great throws. And I think that they have a talented young player at that position in him, but he just needs to play more. But it was pretty much Talen, make some plays with your feet and see if we can get back in this. But nothing between the tackles happened for the Broncos. But Fresno State was a different story, and Jordan Mims was a pretty fantastic running back for them. And we were really having a hard time with him, and they just didn't really go to him much, even though it was a close game and even though they had a lead. So if they tried to lean more on Mims, then we might be having a different conversation right now, and we're going to say it's 1-1. But
sure,
it kind of sounds like there's just not really the bodies to just pound the rock up the middle. But even we do have pretty strong inside linebackers, so I don't know how fruitful of a strategy that would be anyway. But yeah, I never want to hear that much of injury bad luck for anyone. But
yeah, it's good timing. It's good timing for you. Yeah. I will agree with that much. I mean, you'll see. We got some big bodies we can throw up the middle. Sean Chambers is our wildcat quarterback, who was the starting quarterback at Wyoming for a number of years, transferred out last year to basically follow Brent Vegan, who was the offensive coordinator at Wyoming, our current head coach. Hasn't been spectacular throwing the ball, but he is he's a good runner. He's 6'3", 240. He's a big boy. So you'll see probably him running up the gut for sure. He busted out like a 60-yard touchdown last week. He's faster than you think he is. He's a big kid, but he's quick. You'll see him. I'm curious to see if you'll see our fullback, who's like, 6'1", 240, RJ Fitzgerald, somewhere in that range, and played running back in high school. So what else are we going to do? Got to give somebody the ball.
Yeah.
We only handed the ball off, five times last week, fully?
It was weird. It was really weird. We are
two carries
on
in the first half for running backs. It was super weird.
Yeah. Buy or sell, Thorny. We're going to see a new running back this week.
Well, yeah, because I think Garrett Kuhn is going to get a carry.
So you don't think freshman from Wyoming. Kenyon Williams from
you mean like a guy who's not a running back, be a running back?
Yeah.
We have to, right? Someone's going to get, there'll be a defensive back who played running back in high school who's getting carries in practice this week.
Or you guys just something go like full air raid and unleash like a five wide receiver offense. James Vanderbeek.
We got plenty of wide receivers. We got plenty of wide receivers.
And that makes that's like an interesting point. That could be benefit Montana State. Like maybe some unknown creativity that we're going to roll out this week because of the attrition in the running back room. Like that could be Montana State's ace in the hole if we have anything, right?
I mean, our quarterback is very capable of rushing for an easy 100 yards himself. He's very fast. He's very mobile. He rushed the ball in the semifinals last year, 35 times for 160 yards? 35 carries for a quarterback.
A lot of Oregon State fans up at night because we have a history of struggling against mobile quarterbacks. We were up 24-0 against Boise State, and Talen Green would escape a sack and rush for like a gain of 4, and everyone would be like, that's it. I can feel the wheels coming off. Like, it's same old thing. And it's like, God, we're fine. And then he did pop one for a 74-yard touchdown. But even at that time, I was like, all right, he needs to do at least 2.5 more of those for this game to really get out of hand in their favor. And he ended up, I think, with maybe 105, 110 yards, with 74 of them coming on one touchdown run. But yeah, I don't like hearing this stuff, Thorny, that this quarterback could run all over us if he so chooses. If that's the game plan, like, you guys are going to have a shot. Like, I am not expecting any kind of sideways FBS, FCS thing this weekend. Like, I am predicting that Oregon State will win, like, somewhat comfortably by the end of it, but I think it's going to be a tough road. And the thought of a mobile quarterback with no one to hand off to and a limited playbook, meaning he's hyper focused on the one thing he does well, that scares the shit out of me.
Yeah. Somehow last week we rushed for 290 yards with like 5 carries by the running backs.
How many passing yards last week?
265 by quarterback.
You know, we were incredibly balanced, just like you guys. That's one thing I noticed about the Oregon State team in general. You guys have a really good balance between passing and rushing, and so that's going to be a challenge for us. We're young everywhere. We graduated a ton of talent.
It's a young team.
Yeah, and we're still kind of learning our ropes. This is really our first test, and I'd probably agree with you, Terry. I expect the Beavers to come out on top on this. It's going to be a challenge. As a Bobcat fan, I'm hoping you overlook us, because I know you guys got USC coming on the heels of Montana State. So
I don't think
trap game.
I hope no one on the team is overlooking y'all. Yeah, I think right. Jonathan Smith is a good coach in that regard and won't let any of that happen. And I don't think any of the fans were overlooking y'all until today came out with the broadcast information for our game against USC next week, or the following week in week 4, which is a 6:30 p.m. Pacific time kickoff on Pac-12 Network. Not ESPN, woo! Not ESPN2, not FS1, and USC's what,
Fubo TV.
Seventh right now? Exactly. That's, we joke that we have a Fubo TV sponsorship on our podcast, because I talk about Fubo TV because I need it to watch most of our games. It's just crazy to me. And now the fan base is really upset. And there was kind of like whispers, I think, among just sort of Oregon State Twitter, is like, oh, well, if we can get by Montana State and we're 3-0, like, there's a chance that like game day would want to come to Corvallis for undefeated Oregon State versus undefeated USC. And I think that's a fine thought that any fan could have. But then that broadcast information comes out, right? And now it's like everyone's furious about that and kind of overlooking the part that we need to beat Montana State to make that matchup, the juicy matchup between 3-0 Pac-12 teams. One team is the, you know, historical Titan leaving for the Big Ten riches and leaving the conference behind. You've got a job to do first. And I don't think anyone in the Oregon State locker room is overlooking Montana State right now. But I do think when that broadcast information came out earlier today, that there were a number of Oregon State fans who forgot we have a game against a Montana State perennial FCS championship contender at technically a neutral site to take care of before we can think about the Trojans coming to town. So got to put USC in the back burner and only focus about this Saturday.
There should be quite a few Bobcat fans in Portland, I believe. We bought our tickets pretty early. I know there's a good contingent on the Bobcat message board planning to go. So I'm curious about how the stadium's going to look. So I just want to we're probably gonna start wrapping this up because we're getting a little longer on time. I do want to give you my final thoughts on the game. I think real quick, Montana State has been susceptible to this year a little bit to like giving up some longer plays, especially in sealing the edge on some run plays. So I expect the Oregon State to be able to get a few long touchdowns in, which I'm not looking forward to seeing, but I expect they're gonna happen. I would be much more happy if Isaiah Afonso or even Lane Sumner, the two top running backs that we currently have, who have both produced at a high level for the Bobcats this year and in previous years, but they're not playing. I'm very curious. We have a pretty creative, up-and-coming young offensive coordinator. That's what you get at this level. You get like rising stars, or you get like guys that he was like a, what was House right before this? Was he an offensive coordinator at a D3? Like he came
No, he was at like Oregon. Nowhere. He was like an offensive analyst.
Oh, he was an analyst at Oregon. That's right. Oh, he was an analyst for a little bit. So he's got a little bit of a crazy background.
I can already see the headlines, guys. This is rough news.
Well, I will tell you, our game plan from game one and game two offensively were insanely on the opposite spectrums. So I personally, as a Bobcat fan who follows Bobcat football, watches every snap, reads every article, I don't know what the Bobcats are going to do on offense. Like, I do not know.
Good point.
I don't know what Taylor Housewright's got up his sleeve. I know the running back situation. They're going to have to be extra creative. I don't know what's going to happen. I know Tommy Lott's going to chuck the ball down the sidelines for deep balls. That's what he does. He throws deep shots, and then he's going to run and scramble and get some big yards because he's damn quick, and he was a track athlete. He's like Mr. Montana, Butte, Montana, just like All-American, aw shucks kid, lunch pail kid for sure, but he's a hell of an athlete. Thrust into it a little bit early last year, but he's just a sophomore, so he's got a lot of growth ahead of him. But yeah, I have no idea what the Bobcats are going to do on offense. Complete mystery to me, especially with the running back situation. Do you got any extra running backs? You sure you don't got anyone you can send over?
30, you know what?
I think we'll hang on to our guys, but we'll keep that in mind.
What concerns me, a final thought for me, is I think the Bobcats could be kind of in trouble with some of the speed that the Oregon State has on offense. Like a guy like Silas Bolden, your 5'8", 152 speed.
He's so fast.
He could give his fits, you know. Right. So those one-on-one matchups, you know, you could get some big chunk plays. We probably couldn't stop that.
I'm curious real quick. Does Oregon State typically run to the right side with those gigantic dudes over on the right side of the offensive line? I had to ask one last question. Those are huge guys over there.
They are. I haven't ran the numbers on preferences from side to side. I know it seems like Fenwick has been having more success running to the right than he has running to the left, but it's a really experienced unit. Last year it was a finalist for the Joe Moore Award as a top five unit in all of college football. It returned three starters from that unit and then another two guys who played like a lot of snaps. So there's some big boys on that offensive line, and they're pretty damn experienced from left to right. But yeah, there's a lot of size, especially on that right side. So I think when they try to pound it a little bit more, where it's just like, we don't care if it's 2 to 3 yards here on first or second down, we just want to try and impose our will and make the next down more manageable. I do think you can see guys going on that right. But now I'm thinking about it, that Silas Bolden reverse touchdown run against Fresno State was a fake to the right and then got Silas in space on the left side with some pretty good downfield blocking. That's where this team blocks.
True. Like it was very good blocking.
It's a very good blocking team. They do the little things well, which is something that I think even pretty good Oregon State teams or teams that had high expectations in the past fell short and led to upsets like this. So I do think a team that's has proven that they take care of the little things better is less susceptible to what would be a pretty devastating upset if it were to come to pass. So I'm hoping that they do those things well again this Saturday against, like I said, a team that no one in Oregon State football should be looking over unless they want to get fired. But yeah, that right side, man, that offensive line, some big boys, and they played a lot of football. They take a lot of pride in creating those holes. So I don't know much about the front four for the Bobcats, but that's definitely a matchup that I'll be having my eyes on a Saturday afternoon.
Sounds good. Well, I think we're about done. You have any last questions for us or anything before we kind of start wrapping this up?
No, I just thank you guys so much for having me. I think the only thing I would ask, if I mean, I don't know if in your wildest dreams you've sort of come up with a version of this game where Montana State wins. It seems like you're both on the more realistic side of what the odds makers are doing right now. But just as someone, I've seen Oregon State win games they weren't getting anything from the odds makers and had no business of winning. And I've seen us lose games that we had no business of losing. So just what's maybe one thing that you think needs to happen for Montana State to shock Beaver Nation and pull off an upset in Portland on Saturday?
Probably Bobcats plus 3 in turnovers.
Okay. It's not out of the question.
We've turned the ball over 5 times already this year, which is a not something MSU did a lot last year. 5 times this year is pretty troubling. So, but we're still plus. We're even though.
Boise. we were sloppy in our first game. I know it's the first game's the first game, and I was impressed that we didn't turn it over against Fresno. But that's not totally out of the question. Let's say.
Yeah, that if I had to pinpoint one thing, it would win the turnover battle and win it substantially.
All right.
I think if we can make Chance Nolan a little bit uncomfortable, that would give us a shot. But like you guys were just talking about, the size on your offensive line versus our defensive line, I mean, we got some studs, but probably not the depth to continue to blast through and get the pressure we really need. So okay. I don't know. I don't think Montana State's going to come out on as a victor. I would love that. I mean, obviously as a Bobcat fan, but yeah. It's... Regardless, we're just stoked to be there. Like, I think the Montana State, when state schools get together, honestly, we just have a lot in common. I'm excited to meet you down there, Terry. It's going to be fun mingling with the Oregon State fans. I'm excited to be in Portland again. I haven't been there in a long time. Thorny and I are just going to be bouncing around, meeting Bobcat fans and B fans alike. And so... I think it's just going to be a fun game. It's going to be a fun night. It looks like it's going to be 65 degrees and probably going to feel cold because it's been pretty warm over here for the last, 2 months. And
perfect.
So we're excited for some cool weather. I'll bring a jacket and it's going to be a good day.
Both fan bases are equally curious about a football game at Providence Park. I know Portland State used to play there a little bit, but I think
they did
a few years since they did. But it should be fun. We don't have a plan set in stone yet, but I can almost guarantee you the hours leading up to the game on Saturday, both my fellow co-hosts and other Beaver fans will be at a Marathon Taverna, which is just a couple blocks from Providence Park. So you two or any Bobcat fans who want to hang out and have a mini pitcher, which I believe are still $275 at the old Marathon. Good spot to get a pregame pint or two or several at, and
pretty sure this can of beer I've been drinking cost $275.
Yeah, exactly right. it was a great place to be when we all lived in Portland right after graduating and had no money. So a place like Marathon with a prices that. That never change is a great spot to be. So that's where we're going to pregame there for old time's sake. And but we'll be around Portland all weekend. So excited for the chance to meet you guys and to meet a bunch of other Bobcat fans in Portland. And hopefully we get a great game and just another fun college football Saturday. It's great to have it back.
It is great. And we'll definitely take you up on that. And Terry, last thing is, where can anyone listening to this find you and your work?
Of course. So we are the Belligerent Beavs podcast. You can find us Belligerent Beavs wherever you get your podcast. If you want to check us out, we do like to get a little weird and wild on the show. So it is more of a variety show at times. It's not just the Oregon State nitty gritty. We're at Belige Beavs on Twitter. Twitter kind of cut us off on the character limit there. Instagram's different though. So we are at Belligerent Beavs on Instagram. So please give us a follow. We try to be super interactive with people on both Twitter and Instagram, and love having followers and stuff from other teams and get the chance to follow other squads and what they're doing. So any Bobcat fans are more than welcome. And I'm on Twitter at Terry Horstman, TerryHorstman. Pretty much just tweeting about college football and other sports and different things I'm reading and things like that all season long. So more than happy to interact with any of your guys' listeners. Thanks again so much for having me, you guys. This has been a blast.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And have a good night, Terry. Thanks.
For sure. And yeah, hope to see you in Portland and we can trade koozies because we'll have some of our own with us as well. So
deal.
I'll bring some.
All right. Thank you guys. Thanks, Terry. Take care.
See you.